Golf Smarter, number 706. Golf improvement is more about making your swing work, not trying to match the mechanics of a tour player, with Jeff Ritter.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing stories, tips, and insights from great golf minds to help you lower your score and raise your golf IQ. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Jeff.
Fred, great to be here, buddy.
Great to have you back on the show. We've been doing this for years, and that's because I keep learning amazing things from you.
I appreciate you saying that. It's always a pleasure to be on and share some perspectives on the game with you and your listeners.
Thank you very much. I need to catch up with you first. Still at Pronghorn Golf in Bend, Oregon?
Yeah, so our second season sort of winding down here at Pronghorn Resort in beautiful Bend, Oregon. We had a huge studio renovation, created a real state-of-the-art learning environment. It's got all the cool whistles and bells that players expect these days from top coaching outfits. But we also created a really cool partnership with a club fitting outfit called True Spec Golf. They're out of Scottsdale. They're located in about 20 locations throughout North America, but really particular with where they operate and who they work with and sort of the kind of user experience, so to speak, that they deliver. And they actually helped us with the renovation, and I feel like our teaching studio looks more like a showroom at a high end auto dealer. It's crazy. It's not your typical coaching studio where you walk in there and you see a bunch of pool noodles hanging around. I mean, our stuff is like black leather chairs, cool slick technology, and real modern vibe and feel to it. And
very cool.
When people walk in the door, they say wow, and I say wow myself. I'm just lucky to be there, and I'm lucky that we were able to find such a great partner to help us do some really cool things.
It must be so nice to have that kind of support from the club that you're working at, to have them say, yeah, let's invest in this. Hopefully
it
that
really
didn't come
is.
Out of your pocket.
No. It worked out really well for everyone. Pronghorn is a really fantastic location. We got 36 holes, both nationally ranked courses. One's a Fazio design course, another one's a Jack Nicklaus design course.
Wow.
And, the sight lines, of the mountains in the distance covered with snow while you're teeing it up, and just having really just a really great guest experience, at the resort level from top to bottom. They just opened up the brand new Huntington Lodge that's sort of supporting the growth of what's happening, at Pronghorn with golf in Central Oregon. So it's just a great place to be. And, they've sort of recognized myself and our program as, sort of a spoke in the wheel, if you will, that has the opportunity to raise the bar for the guest experience and make things better. So they let us do what we do best. And we've got their support every step of the way, and it's really an incredible partnership to be involved.
Well, I know you're going to short sell this, but they're very lucky to have you. You're really high profile. You're on Golf Digest. You've got this great app in the mttperformance.com site. It's just, they're like, and also the Nike golf schools, right? Golf camps. You're still doing that, the junior golf camps?
Yeah, I still am. I've been the national director of instruction for Nike Junior Golf Camp since 2008, which it's hard to believe when I say 2008 that's not just a couple of years ago. And that's something that I still do. We run our programs down in Pebble Beach with the support of a couple different golf courses, but also a number of Pebble Beach properties. And it's just an incredible time of year. So this particular summer, I've actually been kind of going back and forth. I spend a week up here in Bend, and then I fly down to Pebble Beach, and then back here, and then back out again. But I've been doing about 4 weeks of advanced junior player programs in Pebble Beach, and then I've got some support with my staff that helps with some other all abilities programs as well. So, yeah, thanks for asking. That program keeps on keeping on, and
nice.
It's just another thing that we're always doing, trying to improve. So we had a great season with that as well.
And are you doing anything outside of Oregon or Arizona or Monterey area?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, I mean, we are going to do some golf schools in Arizona this winter.
Of course.
In partnership with Whirlwind Golf Resort there in Chandler. And as you know, and possibly some other listeners who maybe have heard me on the program before, I was, I was there for 15 years, and you actually came down with the Golf Smarter experience, and we had a good time, playing some golf and having dinner together. But we're going to do that, and I guess the big thing that's really kind of cool for me is that pretty much the entire month of December, I'm going to be traveling Australia and New Zealand, doing a bunch of coaching, and also taking a group of players from Australia to the President's Cup at Royal Melbourne. And I've never been to President's Cup matches before, and just to be able to do that, outside of the U.S. and have some fun myself, if you will, exploring some pretty cool places is something I'm really looking forward to.
I have more interest in playing golf in Australia than I do in playing in the UK. I'm sorry for saying that. I'm just a weather wimp.
Well, Fred, funny story. My first, I've been to Australia before.
Oh,
and, I went down there to coach a couple of mini tour players who were really interesting dudes. They both had matching Elvis tattoos on their forearms, right? And they were twins, and their father was an Elvis impersonator. So they had the TCB and a flash on their forearms. And anyway, so they brought me over one year, and it's like, I've done a lot of traveling outside the U.S. Mm-hmm. I'd previously been to the U.K. and done some schools in Liverpool, but I'd never traveled as far as Australia at this particular point in time. And as you know, it's a long flight from California. I mean, you can land in Tokyo in 12 hours, but you got like 17 to Sydney.
Yep.
And Fred, I remember I leave Los Angeles. I'm on that plane for 17 hours. I land in Sydney. I get off the plane. And I was like, I was just here. Because, it's got the Southern California weather, and it's got, the surfing vibe, and it's got all the coffee shops and restaurants. And I'm like, I was just here. I can't believe I flew 17 hours to get off the plane right where I just left. But of course, there's a lot.
Are you sure that you flew to Auckland and not Oakland?
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, Australia is a fantastic place. And, we're just making some light of the fact that we have some similarities in climate. But
oh my gosh!
It's
actually very weird when you're in Australia, because I was there once to watch the sun rise over the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
For a West Coast kid who's been watching the sunset in the Pacific my whole life, to see the sun rise in the Pacific is pretty, pretty strange. Unless I go to Hawaii, of course, but that's different.
For sure.
It's a different continent.
Sure.
Wow. Wow. Great.
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on with Golf Digest?
Oh, yeah. So I'm actually filming a new digital series this week. And I've been lucky to do a number of digital projects for the Golf Digest Schools online program. And so this one, we're going to film out at Pronghorn. And we're still kind of putting the concept together, but it's sort of a four lesson series that breaks through, I don't want to call them swing myths, if you will, but it's sort of, getting down to brass tacks that, here are some ideas that really, really work pretty much across all players. And within that process, there is a little bit of, myth debunking, if you will. But yeah, we're always looking for ways to take, similar concepts and create a new spin on them. And, Golf Digest is once again, coming out to give me the opportunity, and it's something I love doing.
I've had this conversation a couple times recently. I'm curious to know how you feel about what we can call the myth of consistency. How would you even approach those words, or do I need to explain it further?
No, you don't need to explain it further. I mean, the big thing that you're hearing from coaching is, helping golfers understand that we're just dealing with a highly variable game by nature. And golf's not a game of who hits it the best. It's a game of who misses it the least. Hmm. And I think that there's this conditioned mentality relative to golf that just simply creates highly unreasonable expectations, not only for recreational players, but also, really advanced and skilled players. And if you think about it, so Fred, you're a baseball fan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Living there in San Francisco. You like the Giants, right?
Yeah, I'm an A's fan, but I go to both.
You're an A's fan? All right.
Both.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm lucky to have two teams here, so I don't complain.
Yeah. Listen to you keeping everything PC, supporting both sides of the
Oh, people hate me here for that. People hate me. I have lots of theories. Like the DH has got to go unless they either keep the DH on both leagues or get rid of interleague play. I can go on for a while about baseball, but let's not do that.
So anyway, you know, when you think about baseball, there's a lot of ways to get on base, right? And, you know, hitting the ball right on the sweet spot of the bat and sending it over the fence is not the norm. That's something that happens, you know, every once in a while. And that's one of the things that's really exciting about baseball, is because it is so difficult to, you know, to hit a dinger. But you can hit it, you know, right off the handle of the bat, Fred, and it can dribble, you know, 5 feet down the first baseline, and the runner can get on base, and everyone thinks that's awesome, mm-hmm. right? And then you can hit a little grounder in the gap, you know, between second and third, or, you know, a player can, you know, bobble the ball while he's trying to turn a double play, and you're on base, and everyone thinks that's awesome as well. And you know, there's so many ways to get on base.
But they boo intentional walks.
Well, that's okay.
It's like, come on, man, he's going on base. What are you booing for? Okay, go ahead. Yeah, I told you, don't get me started on baseball.
Yeah, but the contact between a baseball bat and a baseball, you know, hardly ever feels good. And as long as you're putting yourself in position to score, then anything that is within those fair or foul lines is considered to be a really great thing. And with golf, we've kind of got this conditioned idea that if the ball hits the toe, or if it hits the heel, or if it, you know, doesn't fly as straight or as far as we would really like it to, then something about that contact or shot kind of sucks in some way, you know. And you see it with young golfers. But the reason why young golfers create, you know, such reactions of disgust to slight mishits is because, you know, that's been a conditioned belief that's been passed down from older golfers that they look up to, right? So there's basically an unrealistic expectation for how many shots we're going to hit just the way that we want. And then, of course, you know, off of hitting a shot that's just a little bit off center, you know, the way that we react in disgust or displeasure is kind of ridiculous. So we're dealing with a highly variable game. You know, it's not about being consistent. It's about being maybe just a little bit more predictable or a little bit more reasonable. And you can say that's all semantics. And sometimes when someone comes in, they go, oh, I want to be more consistent. I don't go down this whole road of, well, what are you talking about? I know that they just want to hit more shots the way that they would like to. But I do think that there's something that's at the heart of that, or the root of that, which is really the fact that we're sort of conditioned to have, you know, an unrealistic expectation to how many shots we're going to hit on the center of the face, how far they're going to fly, and how often that should happen for not only recreational players, but also top players as well.
Let's think about that for a moment. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about lessons.
Let's do it.
One of the things that I really love about your coaching, and that I keep coming back to you for, is that you have this integrative method of bringing all the elements of golf together. And lately, I feel like all I've been doing with these conversations is focusing on swing mechanics and hitting the ball. And I don't like that, in the sense that I want to make sure that we talk about playing golf, because there's so much more. And you incorporate not just the physical and the mental game, the mindset, but you fitness and nutrition and the swing and various challenges, all these elements together. And there's few instructors that I ever talk to that really look at the whole package. And that's what I love about what your work is doing.
I appreciate you saying that. And I'm not sure exactly when it happened in my life. You know, I grew up the son of a golf pro, and I'm playing the game since I was 3 years old. I'm 47 years old now, and you spend a lot of time at the golf course. And you also spend a lot of time from time to time being frustrated about your game, the direction that it's going, how connected to the game you are, how much you love the game or not in that moment. And I think somewhere along the way, I started to sort of get it a little bit more, Fred. when I say it, I mean, I sort of got the point of what my connection to the game was. And it was really an opportunity to learn a lot, you know, about myself, about the expectations that I create, about pursuing a certain goal set, if you will, and then seeing how well I can deal with not getting what I want. So, and that's why, you know, with Make the Turn, you know, it's skill building and it's mindset and it's fitness and it's nutrition, but really it's, you know, it's using the game to help you have life be the way you want it to be. And at the end of the day, it's just a game, but the lessons that you can learn within the game in the pursuit of shooting lower scores, not only have opportunities to create positive movement on your scorecard, but also positive movement in your life. And at the end of the day, for most golfers, you know, golf is a recreational outlet. They don't have a tremendous amount of time to pursue playing better. Some people are more invested than others, but if you look at the game from the right perspective, from a position of, you know, goal setting, from a position of playful curiosity, always trying to go out there and have fun and find a little joy within the struggle, then you're going to want to keep going back to the golf course because it's something that you genuinely enjoy being part of because of not only the progress you can make, but also the things you can learn about yourself along the way.
Boy, do we lose sight of that all too fast, especially when you're playing a lot. Like when you're playing, I think that if you're playing infrequently, you're frustrated. If you're playing a lot, then you get in your head and it's like, what's going on? And this is now becoming more work than it is fun. It's not a recreational outlet. It's a passion that gets in the way of enjoying life sometimes.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, one of the things that I help people with that lose their way or, you know, or junior golfers that, you know, really have a hard time enjoying being at the golf course, which is a really sad thing to see, as I say, you know, let's just take a step back for a moment and let's analyze what it means to play golf or to play anything. Like, what the heck does the word play even mean? And if I ask that to a 13 or a 14 year old kid, they go, oh, it means to have a good time. I said, you're damn right it does. To play means to have fun. So when you come to the golf course, I want you and everyone out there listening, I want them to show up ready to play, right? Ready to have a good time no matter what. And the thing is that most golfers, I won't say most golfers, because there's a lot of golfers out there, as you know, Fred, that are going to the golf course and they're not having a good time practicing. They're not having a good time playing. You know, they're expressing their disappointment or frustration with, you know, what they're able to or not able to pull off. And you look at it and you say, why are you guys even here? I mean, if this is the way you approach having a good time outside, then maybe there's some other things that would be a little bit easier for you to have a good time doing than coming out here and, you know, and demonstrating this kind of, you know, attitude or behavior towards trying to play a game. It's a game. G-A-M-E. It's no different than a game of chess or checkers or basketball or, you know, whatever. You know, and games are meant to challenge us, but in the end, the reason for participating in a game is to have a good time, to challenge yourself skill-wise.
Yeah, but we have expectations. We have expectations. You know,
well, sure,
it's like, you know, when you're a you know, a guy who shoots in the mid 80s, you want to shoot in the low 80s. And as long as you keep shooting in the mid 80s, you get frustrated because you know you can do better because you have a couple bad shots every round.
Sure.
But there's
also this, there's a certain expectation, you know, and we do have expectations, but
sure.
You know, we have expectations relative to everything we do.
Yep.
We have expectations waking up in the morning as to how our day is going to go.
Or how our body's going to feel.
Just like we have expectations relative to how our round of golf is going to go.
Yep.
And the whole secret to playing a great round of golf is to, number one, over every shot, be really, really clear with how you want things to go. Right, that's the mental imagery or the daydreaming component of a pre-shot routine. And then from there, you know, as you approach the golf shot, you want to be able to approach that shot with a certain level of excitement and enthusiasm for this thing that you get to do. It's not something you have to do. It's something you get to do, right? Mm-hmm. And then from there, you get to see how well you can handle not getting what you want. And that's the whole lesson of what living a good life is all about. Hey, let's wake up with a clear picture of how we want things to go.
Yep.
Let's approach every single thing we're doing with a certain level of excitement and enthusiasm. And then when we lay down in bed at night, let's see how we deal with not getting what we want.
Love it. Love it.
And that's inspiring. That's what golf's about. That's what golf's all about.
You know?
And, you know, relative to, you know, playing golf and there's a couple things. Number one, you know, we got to get out of this, you know, perfectionistic, you know, based mentality towards hitting golf shots. And one of my favorite quotes that I share with all my players, especially players that are struggling with this, is the idea that Jack Nicklaus once shared, which was, you know what, I won a lot of tournaments with different swings. Right. So how often does someone show up to the golf course and they're warming up and the ball's not flying the way that it normally does? And then all of a sudden, you know, they get totally down relative to what their experience is going to be like that day. You know, so this is the highly variable nature of the game. The fact that your swing is always changing, your ball flight's always changing, how you feel is always changing. Jim Flick used to say that golf is a game of emotion and adjustment. And what Jack Nicklaus shared was the fact that I showed up plenty of times with swings that were different from my norm, but it didn't stop me from winning. You know what I mean? And that's, you know, when I come across a junior golfer, especially that sort of really embraces that and they go out there without their best stuff and they find a way to knock the ball down the fairway and knock it up by the green and stuff that thing in the hole. I mean, they're just so proud of themselves for being able to post a good score when they're not making the game easier by the quality of their striking. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, Nicklaus also believed was that it was easier to win a major than it was to win a regular tour event, because there's only about 10% of the field of a major that actually believes that they deserve to win. You know, so there's just so much mindset behind winning, scoring, finding joy in the struggle, loving being out there, regardless of how solid you're hitting it. And those are the things that I like to share with my players. And Fred, if somebody comes in and they say, you know, well, why can't I break 100? You know, why can't I break 90? You know, why can't I break 80? Well, number one, you haven't been able to reach those milestones because you don't deserve to yet.
Ooh.
Right.
Ooh.
And that's the fact. You will break 100 when you deserve to break 100. You will break 90 when you deserve to break 90. You'll break 80 when you deserve to break 80. You know, so there's also this mentality relative to our culture, which is you should get something for nothing. It's just the way it is. You know, you walk into Costco and everyone wants something for nothing. You know, people go out to the golf course and they go, yeah, I'd really like to be this kind of golfer, but I don't actually want to put the time and effort, you know, required to be able to do that, you know. And, you know, this whole lesson that I share, you know, comes off of a story known as the black belt mentality. And I may have shared this before on your show, but it's one of my favorite stories. And story goes, yeah. So basically, a young boy, you know, walks into the dojo, right? And in a karate dojo, the word dojo just means place of learning, right? So young boy walks into the dojo. It could be a young girl. Doesn't really matter. You know, just a story. And he or she says to their master, their sensei, you know, master, when will I be a black belt? And then the master replies, well, you'll never be a black belt. For anyone who would ask that question, doesn't have the patience and discipline to do what's required to become a black belt, right? So basically, you become a black belt when you deserve to be a black belt, just as you break 190 or 80 when you deserve to. Now, what I like to have players do is shift their vocabulary a little bit, saying, you know, why can't I break 100? Why can't I break 100? 90. Why can't I break 80? Maybe shift that around to, why don't I break 100? Why don't I break 90? Why don't I break 80? Because there's some action behind that. Just saying I can't do it, well, that doesn't really take us anywhere. But when you say, well, why don't I? Well, then we can start to analyze, well, you know what? You hit balls out of play or in positions of incurring a penalty such as pitching the ball back into play. You do that six times around, right? So we need to be able to get your tee ball more reasonable in terms of distance and accuracy to give you an opportunity of scoring. Oh, you know, when your ball is near the green, there are a number of occasions where it's taking you two shots to get on the green out of the bunker, or it's taking you two shots to get onto the green from a pitching situation. There's a number of occasions where you incur what I call unforced errors. You're over the golf shot. You're harboring some degree of doubt, but you're hitting the ball anyway, right? There are a number of occasions where the pace on your longer putts is not reasonable enough to be able to get down in two. So now we go, oh, why don't I get what I want? Well, we can talk about that, and now we can create a plan around that to help you get this result that you're looking for. But I think that there's just a lot of psychology, if you will, associated with helping people get what they want out of the game. And it starts with, you know, awareness of their current attitudes, awareness of their current behaviors, awareness of their current results, and then being able to ask some questions and then put into play a mindful protocol that really helps people get where they're trying to get. And what I would say, just one more thing here on this, is that, you know, what to do relative to, you know, your technique or your attitude or your way of being on the course, I mean, that's the easy part. That's just the diagnostic part of a golf lesson. The real secret in coaching and the real challenge in learning is how are we going to do it, right? And that's what coaching is all about. You know, coaching is all about taking somewhere that they possibly couldn't go on their own without the support of a coach, because a coach stretches your mind. A coach stretches your belief system. A coach challenges you in ways that you simply have a hard time challenging yourself. And that's why I love coaching, because I love helping people see that, you know, they can play a better game. They can have a lot more fun. And the possibilities that exist for them within the game are usually a lot greater and more exciting than they tend to believe or discover on their own.
I can't believe, let's see if I can find this. I got an email that I printed because I knew at some point I was going to use it. Here it is. This came from, it's amazing that you're saying what you're saying, because this is perfect. Lamar Kersey wrote in and said, so I've heard many different approaches to a golf swing, from tilt and stack, or is it stack and tilt, the one pivot, the 8.5 swing, to making sure your hips turn, to rotating the arms over. I understand them all, but which one would best help my game out? Now, obviously, I'm not somebody who can answer this question. That's why I'm glad I have you here. And he finishes it up with, should I try each one for a round and see which gives me the best score and performance, or go with one that's easiest to be consistent and is more tuned to my natural swing? Now, I wrote back to him saying I'm not qualified, but here's my thought. But I'm not going to say that because I really want to know what you think.
Yeah, well, so the cool thing about spending as much time as I have in coaching, you know, so I gave my first golf lesson when I was 16 years old, and I fell in love with it, you know, at a very young age. So I've been really on the lesson tee helping golfers for, you know, almost 30 years now, and been really fortunate to work for a lot of different golf schools and know a lot of coaches and really experience firsthand a number of the coaching systems, if you will, that this player is mentioning, sharing, or asking questions, you know, regarding.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I'll say is that they all work, right? they all work
for somebody.
For somebody, right? And they can work for almost everyone if they're willing to, you know, really build their games from the ground up within that basic system. But, you know, when I'm given a golf lesson, Fred, and one of my favorite things to do at the end of the day when I'm driving home, is I ask myself, where did that lesson come from? That lesson that I gave at 9 o'clock, where did that one come from? And then the one at 11 o'clock, where did that one come from? The one at 3 o'clock, where did that one come from? And because I've been so, you know, well-versed or introduced to such a number of different, you know, great coaches and systems.
Educated,
thank you. It's easy for me to try and find the least line of resistance for a player to get the result they're looking for using the ideas that are going to be most impactful for them, right? So I don't have just one way of suggesting that you swing your arms, or one way of suggesting that you move your body. But what I do have, and this is where every player needs to start, is an understanding of what the true fundamentals of the game actually are. And then you look at a player's movement pattern with their body in the golf club, and then you determine where those fundamentals are out of reason. So when I say fundamental, I'm not talking about grip and stance and posture and ball position, because a fundamental should be an absolute. It should be a building block. It should be something that all players do in a similar way in the pursuit of a certain result. But if we look at grip, for example, Jordan Spieth versus Freddie Couples, those grips couldn't be more different from each other. So grip can't be a fundamental. If you look at distance from the golf ball, there was a guy back in the day named Scott Hoke, and he stood really, really close to the golf ball, had an extremely upright golf swing. And then you look at someone like Arnold Palmer that stands twice as far away from the ball as Scott Hoke. So guess what? Posture, distance from the ball, that can't be a fundamental as well. Aim, Sam Snead would aim his feet close in the trees to the right. Anyone who's been to a golf tournament and saw Freddie Couples hit a ball, he's got his feet aimed in the trees to the left. So aim cannot be a fundamental. So so basically all these things that we see as fundamentals because of the way we've been conditioned to think about the game really aren't fundamentals at all, but rather variables that when they're fit together in certain combinations lead to the true fundamentals of golf, which we call ISC, or impact, speed, and control. Now, of course, with impact, I mean, obviously every shot culminates with impact, and we can have a lot of different ways of describing impact. But just to make things simple for your listeners, we look at impact as what we call low point control, which means where does the club touch the ground? Where does it bottom out? Where does your circle connect with earth? How solid is your hit relative to center face? And then how reasonable is your angle of attack? You know, so it doesn't matter if you're dealing with a 10-year-old golfer, a top high school player, a collegiate All-American, or a Masters champion. If they were to be hitting balls next to each other on a driving range, and you were to watch where all their divots were, all their divots would be on the target side of the ball with a reasonable amount of down and a center strike on the club face. So that would be a fundamental, right? So impact, where are we striking? How much down are we hitting? Where is the ball hitting the face? The second thing that's common to all great players is they produce enough speed, Fred, to either compete with who they're playing with, right? So obviously, you know, 10-year-olds can keep up with 10-year-olds and 15-year-olds with 15-year-olds and tour players with tour players and whatnot. Or do they have enough speed to challenge the golf course? And there's no one that plays professional golf that takes three shots to get to a par four. Just doesn't exist, right? So when you look at high-level players, they all produce a reasonable amount of speed for competition and or scoring. And then the final thing that all great players possess is a shot pattern that has a predictable launch direction, height, and curve. They're not all the same, but they're all more similar than not. Whereas high handicap players, they hit it up, down, left, and right. They've got two-way misses, right? So what we're looking for in a golf lesson is, number one, to help players have an awareness of where they are now relative to their low point control, their ability to produce speed, and their ability to control launch, height, and curve. And if any of those things are out of reason, then we come up with an adjustment-based protocol to shift those behaviors more back into reason so that they're more compliant with ISC, and the more compliant they are with ISC, you know, the better golf shots they're going to hit and the lower their scores are going to be. So going full circle relative to the question, there are some lessons that I give to a person that would be really effective using more of a stack and tilt based mentality relative to them maybe finding a more consistent, predictable low point. And I can just think about the stuff I've learned from those guys. I see the way this player is moving and I say, you know, Bob or Jan or Jack, for you, this is going to be your least line of resistance to getting the result you're looking for. I've also had golfers show up moving their body in a way that would be more in an opposing direction to stack and tilt, more like a Jimmy Ballard in philosophy. You know, when Curtis Strange was winning those U.S. Opens, you know, back in the day, you know, he was using a movement pattern that actually shifted his body more off the ball in the backswing and back to the ball at contact. And sometimes a golfer will show up doing a lot of things that are just so consistent in line with that particular system that I know if I can just adjust one little thing, that everything's going to come together for that player in a way where it may not have if I chose a slightly different avenue or route. So to answer your question relative to your listener, number one, you have to create an awareness of what you are right now. Don't just go ahead and you know, try one system and try the other system or a series of systems without really understanding what you're doing now. In order to be different from what you are, you have to have an awareness of what you are, right? And all golf information is going to be helpful for someone, but you have to find the information that's going to be most helpful for you based on any unreasonable contact or patterns in flight relative to this idea of impact, speed, and control. And then from there, once you understand where you're unreasonable, then you can look at a system like Stack and Tilt. You can look at a system like the A-Swing or Jimmy Ballard or Jim Flick or, you know, on and on and on. You can go, hey, there are some things that they talk about here that I think based on who I am and what I do would really be of help. So they all work, but there's some information that'll get you farther away versus closer if you're not selecting the ideas that are unique to you and where you're unreasonable or imbalanced within your impact, speed, and control-based protocol.
Amazing answer. Phenomenal answer. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Oh, man. It's so great to talk to you. Everyone, check them out. MTT Performance, M as in make the turn. MTTperformance.com. Jeff Ritter. Follow him on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah.
Are you MTT Performance at all those places?
No, actually, on Instagram, it's at MTT Golf. The same thing on Twitter.
MTT
make
Golf.
The turn.
Okay.
Yeah, make the turn on YouTube. But what I'll say is that, you know, a lot of times, Fred, we're as coaches, you know, we get in front of the camera and we give golf tips, and here's the tip of the day or whatever.
Yeah.
But what I started doing, which people have been really enjoying, is you know, I'm always mic'd up during my golf lessons, and I always video the lessons that I give. As a take-home tool or reference for the players that I coach. And what we've been doing is taking some little clips from some of these, you know, real golf lessons with real golfers, and we're posting them on Instagram to give other players out there an opportunity to have an inside look at what it's like to be coached, you know, to see what it's like to really work through a challenge with ball flight, to make an adjustment. Because I think a lot of the stuff that I share and the clips that I choose, they're not so much in line with this is how you fix a hook and this is how you fix a slice. Because in coaching, you always have to coach the player. It's what I call coaching what is. You know what? In a book, it says do this, this, and this. But that doesn't always work in real life because you have to coach, you know, according to a player's current behavior pattern. So the stuff that I'm sharing is really unique to each player in the video. But a lot of the how we go about making a change, the mindset behind, you know, creating an adjustment in behavior, the mindset associated with, you know, how to practice effectively or how to, you know, reach some of your goals or how to get through some of these little, you know, bumps in the road, if you will. Those are the things that I love sharing that come from the inside that are really sort of difficult to just present unless it's being seen or heard in line with a real life client with a real life desire to do something differently. So that's what I'd have people do. I would have them check out at MTT Golf on Instagram. And there's a bunch of stuff that we've been posting the last few weeks, and the response has been great. I think people really enjoy just seeing a real lesson at play instead of being presented with a tip to do X, Y, or Z.
Excellent. Thank you. Always great to talk to you, man. Thanks so much for giving your time. Have a great trip in Australia. Let's talk when you get back.
Right on, Fred. Hey, keep doing what you do. You do a lot of great stuff for golfers. I know you have a quality program, and you know the people that listen to you and have over the years, I know they really enjoy the time and the effort and the care you put into helping them you know, enjoy the game just a little bit more.
I always enjoy the game a lot more after I talk to him. I can't wait to go out and play tomorrow after that conversation. Hey, congratulations, Matthew Knapp. Why? because Matthew Knapp of Sanford, North Carolina, was randomly selected to win a dozen golf balls of his choice from twoguyswithgolfballs.com. Hey, remember to tell your friends about the amazing deals you get when you purchase premium quality used golf balls from twoguyswithgolfballs.com. And don't forget to use Golf Smarter at checkout for an additional 10% off every order every time. And that additional discount is active until April 1, 2020. Matthew, I will put you in touch with Sam over at twoguyswithgolfballs.com, and you will arrange the balls that you would like to select, and he will ship them to you. Congratulations, and thanks so much for participating. Our next giveaway is for another $100 Amazon gift card, courtesy of our friends at autoslash.com. Deadline to enter is Sunday, September 22nd, 2019, midnight Pacific time, 3 a.m. Eastern. To enter, go to golfsmarter.com and click on the giveaway banner at the top of the homepage. I shared an email from Lamar Kersey earlier in our conversation with Jeff, and it's actually part of an ongoing conversation that I've been having with Lamar, and he's not the only one. People email me. I get into these long conversations about their golf games back and forth and back and forth. I just love doing it. So anyway, some of the things that Lamar said may... In earlier emails may ring true for you. So let me just share a little bit here because it's a long email. I'm only going to give you a part of it. Let's see here. Thanks to you and your Golf Smarter podcast, I've been able to take my swing to a whole other level. I listen to past episodes on my way to and from work every day, and the advice I have received has truly made a huge impact on my golf game. I never understood how much the mental side of the game was until listening to your show and applying the knowledge that has been given out. I've been reading Zen Golf and have gathered a wealth of knowledge because I heard about it from your show. I personally want to thank you for everything you do and all the advice I've received to get my game to be consistently down in the low 80s and three rounds now in the 70s, and he dropped it down from the mid 90s and on and on. Thank you, Lamar. Thank you so much for participating. That's really awesome. I appreciate it. This week on Golf Smarter Mulligans, we get outside of instruction a little bit to learn about golf course architecture and how knowing some of the different design elements of a golf course, how they can make you a better, smarter golfer. Golf Smarter Mulligans is supported by those two friends that we mentioned, autoslash.com and twoguyswithgolfballs.com, and I thank them very much for both participating in the show. So make sure you get your free subscription to Golf Smarter or Golf Smarter Mulligans wherever you get your favorite podcasts. If you have any questions, comments, reports on your game, or just want to have a conversation, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.